Text 66. Ian McEwan. A racy attack.
Until then, I hadn't seen what he had seen. Later, he assured me that all the elements of the situation had been in place when we first arrived, but it was only when I called after him and followed him that I saw the red flag. It was supported on a short pole, a sawn-off broomstick perhaps, held by a slight man in his early 20s. He looked Turkish. He had black curls and black clothes, a black double-breasted jacket worn over a black T-shirt and black jeans. He was strolling up and down in front of the crowd, head tipped back, the flag on its pole slanted across his shoulder. When he stepped backwards into the path of a Wartburg, he refused to move, and the car was obliged to manoeuvre round him. As a provocation, it was already beginning to succeed, and this was what was drawing Bernard towards the road. The young man's antagonists were a mixed bunch, but what I saw in that first instant were two men in suits, business types or solicitors, right by the curb. As the young man passed, one of them flicked him under the chin. It was not so much a blow as an expression of contempt. The romantic revolutionary jerked away and pretended nothing had happened. An old lady in a fur hat screamed a long sentence at him and raised an umbrella. She was restrained by the gentleman at her side. The flagman raised his standard higher. The second solicitor type took a step forwards and punched out at his ear. It did not connect well, but it was enough to make the young man falter. Disdaining to touch the side of his head where the punch had landed, he continued his parade. By this time, Bernard was halfway across the road, and I was just behind. As far as I was concerned, the flagman could have what he was asking for. My anxiety was for Bernard. His left knee seemed to be giving him trouble, but he was limping ahead of me at a fair pace. He had already seen what was coming next, an uglier manifestation, coming at a run from the direction of Kochstrasse. There were half a dozen of them, calling to each other as they came. I heard the words they were calling, but at the time I ignored them. I preferred to think that a long evening in the rejoicing city had starved them of action. They had seen a man punched in the head and had been energised. They were aged between 16 and 20. Collectively, they exuded a runtish viciousness, an extravagant air of underprivilege with their acneed pallor, shaved heads and loose, wet mouths. The Turk saw them charging towards him and tossed his head like a tango dancer and turned his back. To be out here doing this on the day of communism's final disgrace showed either a martyr's zeal or an unfathomable masochistic urge to be beaten up in public. It was true that most of the crowd would have dismissed him as a crank and ignored him. Berlin was a tolerant place after all. But tonight there was just sufficient drunkenness and a vague sense in a few people that someone ought to be blamed for something. And the man with the flag seemed to have found them all in one place. I drew level with Bernard and put my hand on his arm. "Stay out of this, Bernard. You could get hurt." "Nonsense," he said, and shook his arm free. We arrived at the young man's side several seconds before the kids. He smelled strongly of patchouli, which was not, to my mind, the true scent of Marxist-Leninist thought. Surely he was a fraud. I just had time to say, "Come on," and I was still tugging at Bernard's arm when the gang arrived. He stood between the boys and their victim and spread his arms. "Now then," he said, in the old-fashioned, kindly stern voice of an English bobby. Did he really think he was too old, too tall and thin, too eminent to be hit? The kids had stopped short and were bunched up in a pack, breathing heavily, heads and tongues lolling in bemusement at this beanpole, this scarecrow in a coat who stood in their way. I saw that two of them had silver swastikas pinned to their lapels. Another had a swastika tattoo on his knuckle. I did not dare turn round to look, but I had the impression that the Turk was taking the opportunity to roll up his flag and slip away. The solicitor types, amazed by what their own violence had conjured up, had retreated deeper into the crowd to watch. I looked around for help. An American sergeant and two soldiers had their backs to us as they walked to confer with their East German counterparts. Among the kids, the bemusement was turning to anger. Suddenly, two of them ran round Bernard, but the flagman had already forced a way through to the back of the crowd, and now he was sprinting up the road. He turned the corner into Kochstrasse and was gone. The two gave half-hearted pursuit, then came back to us. Bernard would have to do instead. "Now, off you go," he said brightly, shooing them with the backs of his hands. I was wondering whether it was more understandable, or rather more loathsome, that these people with swastikas should be German, when the smallest of them, a pin-headed tyke in a bomber jacket, nipped forwards and kicked Bernard on the shin. I heard the thud of boot on bone. With a little sigh of surprise, Bernard folded up in sections onto the pavement. There was a groan of disapproval from the crowd, but nobody moved. I stepped forwards and swung out at the boy and missed. But he and his friends were not interested in me. They were gathering round Bernard, ready, I thought, to kick him to death. One last glance towards the guardroom showed no sign of the sergeant or the soldiers. I jerked one of the boys back by his collar and was trying to reach for another. There were too many for me. I saw two, perhaps three, black boots withdrawing on the backswing. But they did not move. They froze in place. For just then, out of the crowd, there sprang a figure who whirled about us, lashing the boys with staccato sentences of piercing rebuke. It was a furious young woman. Her power was of the street. She had credibility. She was a contemporary, an object of desire and aspiration. She was a star, and she had caught them being vile even by their own standards. The force of her disgust was sexual. They thought they were men, and she was reducing them to naughty children. They could not afford to be seen shrinking from her, backing off. But that was exactly what they were doing now, even though the outward signs were laughs, shrugs, and the unheard insults they called out to her. They pretended to themselves, to each other, that they were suddenly bored, that it would be more interesting elsewhere. They began moving back towards Kochstrasse, but the woman did not let up her tirade. They probably would have liked to run from her, but protocol obliged them to keep to a forced, self-conscious swagger, while she followed them down the street, shouting and waving her fist. They had to keep the catcalls coming, and their thumbs hooked in their jeans. I was helping Bernard to his feet. It was only when the young woman came back to see how he was, and her identically dressed friend appeared at her side, that I recognised them as the two who had swished past us on the June 17th Street. Together we supported Bernard while he tested his weight on his leg. It did not appear to be broken. There was some applause in the crowd for him as he put his arm round my shoulder, and we shuffled away from the checkpoint.